Hi, podcast listeners. Thanks so much for coming to visit my eco-friendly home today. I'm your host, Madison Hopkins, and I'm so delighted to have you. When you're a guest in my eco-friendly home, I want you to walk away with tangible steps to reduce your home's emissions, live healthier, cleaner, save money, and of course, build community. So come on in and make yourself right at home. Oh, goody, you brought those low-sugar cookies I love, my favorite. Podcast listeners, welcome back to Eco-Friendly Homes. Today we have as our guest Javon Taylor of False Ego, based in Denver, Colorado. So False Ego is a clothing brand, and that means today we are diving into the Eco-Friendly Homes clothing edition, which I am super excited about because everyone wears clothes. Everyone at least puts their clothes in some sort of container to store it, whether it's a dresser or a closet, but we all wear clothes. And so that is a really big part of the house. And Javon and False Ego practice sustainability in many areas of their business, all the way from their shipping, their packaging, their manufacturers, the cotton. So it's all over your website, Javon. Y'all make it very, very crystal clear as to what your practices are. And I really admire that on your website. So welcome to the show and thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be on, and I love what you're doing as well. I think building this community of eco-conscious consumers and, you know, advocators is important. So thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Yeah, it is super important. And I was noticing you'll also do community events. So I looked on your events calendar and I was like, oh, I should go to some of these. So
yeah, no, we do a bunch of things. We're actually coming out with a new website pretty soon to kind of like better communicate all the things we're looking to do. I think right now it's, although I think our message as far as like sustainable fashion and some community initiatives we're doing are on our website, but we're looking to kind of better communicate that, you know, our products are just like a tangible way to support the bigger initiatives we're doing. So for example, like right now we're doing a project with the National Wildlife Federation and Botanic Gardens, and we're looking to replace a lot of the concrete in the area by our shop with native trees and plants.
So Pines was telling me about that, Pines of Adult Entertainment, which for you podcast guests is another local Denver store in the Rhino Five Points area. And he mentioned, you and I haven't talked about this yet, but yeah, you are working to replace a lot of the concrete with trees, which I think is amazing.
Thank you.
Dive into that a little bit more, please.
Yeah, so right now this Five Points area is changing, you know, every day. But I mean, despite all the changes, they're just building more buildings and just more concrete, more asphalt. And the whole area is pretty much 80% concrete. So in the summertime, it's like 10 to 12 degrees hotter than places like Cherry Creek or Park Hill, where there's abundance of parks, abundance of trees, abundance of just greenery and green spaces. And we're looking to kind of bring that and provide, you know, like environmental access or just park access to people in the neighborhood where our shop is at. So we're starting out with the business district, working with Eden's Properties, who owns, I think, like 3 or 4 blocks of properties over here. And that's where we're going to start. And then as we continue to build the project, we're going to go more into deeper into the Five Points area and start working with the residential portions of the city. And I think it's really important because it's just people have been talking about doing this for the last 30, 40 years, but nobody's actually put actionable steps to it. And, you know, I think we have a really unique partnership as far as, you know, we're a small business clothing store in the area. Then we're working with the development company who owns the properties, as well as one of the biggest nonprofit organizations in the nation with National Wildlife Federation, as well as another big nonprofit called Denver Botanic Gardens. And I think it's very unique because you don't see a lot of, you know, small businesses working with these NGOs or, you know, private sector companies. And I think it's just, you know, it's brilliant, first off. And then we're looking to like turn this into like a prototype where we can create a toolkit and provide this toolkit to other businesses, other business districts, other developers, et cetera, and spread the message, you know, beyond just the Denver community.
So that is one thing that I learned about you and False Ego before, and this is our first time meeting podcast guests, but before we anything else, was that how involved in the community that you are. And that's a huge part of sustainability as well. And I've had a couple episodes in my podcast specifically talking and exclusively talking about community, because part of living in an eco-friendly home is the community that you have around you. And so I think that that's really very amazing and inspiring that you are so involved in the community. Do you allow other people, like if I kind of want to participate, if you would allow me to participate, and if, you know, I show up enough to actually contribute and participate, like, do y'all allow community members to help you guys in this tree planting in the neighborhood and stuff?
Yeah, no, for sure. We're open to anybody who wants to, you know, show up and, you know, participate. Right now, the biggest dilemma with that is we have to wait for certain city permits to get approved and certain, so we can actually have people out there digging up, helping move this concrete, et cetera. So right now we're going to be putting a bunch of planters on like the porch areas for the podcast listeners, the area that we're in, a lot of our stores are elevated. One, because historically used to be like a railroad track down the road. So, but anyway, we're replacing all that with planters, and that's going to be the first step. Then the second step, once like the permits get approved and we actually get funding from the city, as well as a couple of grants we applied for, we're going to start breaking down the concrete and like replacing it. So, but yeah, once that's all done, we're definitely open to anybody who wants to come help, because it's definitely going to take a village to make that happen. So we'd love to have you.
So you said people have been planning this for 30 years. You know, they've been saying they're going to do it. And I think it really fits into like the mold of our current social, like, society, that, okay, we've been planning to do these things. We've been talking about going green, and now it's going to be a little bit harder to do it because the part of town that y'all are in, like, it wasn't developed. They had all the opportunity to include greenery, include a park, build a park before they continued to develop it, but they haven't done that. And there's a building right around the corner. Not trying to throw it under the bus, but just for context, it's the Camden.
Yep.
And there's like no trees. They just developed that building. They just built it. Like, it just finished like last year, and there's no trees, and it's so hot in that building. So I know exactly what you mean. But to give the listeners a little bit more well-rounded picture, who is False Ego? What is False Ego? Why did you start a sustainable clothing company?
For sure. Yeah. So False Ego is a Denver owned business. We've been in business for about 2.5 years now. We got into our retail location about 6 or 7 months ago. So yeah, we're essentially a brand that sells clothes, but like I said earlier, we pretty much use our physical products as a tangible way to support bigger initiatives. So, I mean, in the grand scheme, we're a customer empowerment tool. So of course we allow you to support, you know, other initiatives through purchasing our clothes. But if you come to our store, you'll see there's, you know, 10 other vendors, whether that be vegan skincare products or candles or local artists who have murals on our wall or just art on our wall for sale. We got spring water from a local brand, et cetera. But pretty much we, you know, when you come in, not only are you sporting eco-friendly, you know, products, but you're also buying local. You're buying, you know, from other minority-owned businesses, et cetera. And we want to allow people to understand the fact that they vote with their dollar every day and give them access to things that allow them to support bigger initiatives outside of just your normal fast fashion or, you know, unsustainable products that you get from other bigger chains.
Customer empowerment store.
There you go. Yep. Specifically allowing the customer to buy eco-friendly. We also have a recycling program where, like, say you buy a hoodie and, you know, a year or two from now you don't want it anymore, you can send it back to us and we give you a new one. We'll recycle your old one and turn it into air insulation for buildings and homes. So to kind of go deeper into that, that's the reason why we use Pima cotton. So Pima cotton is one of the rarest forms of cotton that exists right now, but it uses less water than your conventional cotton, because cotton in general is a thirsty plant, so you're going to use a lot of water regardless.
Also grown in thirsty states, like it's grown in California, which is a super thirsty state.
Absolutely. Yep, for sure. So, I mean, that's the reason why we do that. And yeah, I mean, we also have other products that are made from upcycled materials, like bags that are made from like kiteboard kites or other like roll top bags that are made from, you know, recycled bike inner tubes, et cetera. There's a company we work with that gets a bunch of excess materials from big brands like Nike or Reebok, or like even outdoor brands that make like tents or kites or whatever you could think of. A lot of those big companies end up with like thousands of pounds of excess material that they have nothing to do with, so they just throw it away. And the company we work with uses that material to turn it into like wallets or sling like waste fanny packs or roll top bags or et cetera.
But, oh, that's so cool. I didn't see that on your website about the reuse of scrap material. And I didn't even think about what they did with all the scrap fabrics, but I know, like, for instance, and this is also just a good analogy, like in cuts of bacon you can buy at the store sometimes because it has to fit into the certain size of packaging. And if it doesn't fit, you know, if it doesn't fit the size of the sheets or the size of the shirt, it's just scrap fabric. That's really cool. I didn't know that y'all did that.
Absolutely. That's a perfect example.
Yeah, bacon.
For sure. But yeah, so that's essentially what False Ego is. And we're growing, you know, I feel like every day, damn, there's always like a new initiative we're getting involved with. But outside of the brand itself, like the for-profit, we just got our nonprofit filed through the state a couple of days ago. That's called A Part of Everything. That's also the False Ego slogan. In that, the nonprofit is going to be focused on like more focused initiatives with, you know, education, youth and adult education, as well as other environmental initiatives, kind of furthering the project we're doing with the National Wildlife Federation. But I think that's going to allow us to funnel in funds to like do bigger projects, as well as, you know, with the education piece, we're looking to do a bunch of different things. Right now, we have a couple partnerships, can't speak too deeply on, but we're working with a couple universities and we're looking to create learning labs, kind of giving access to young and adult learners, giving them access to like software programs, whether that be Adobe platforms, whether you're doing graphic design or editing videos, or you can have access to 3D animation software if you're using Rhino, or even like Ableton or Pro Tools if you make music. So these are options, as well as like we're going to have that linked up to an actual maker space where we're giving these people access to different tools, the 3D printers, wood, where they can create these different things and kind of just create a platform for people to create. I think it's super important to foster creativity and like beyond the sustainability of, you know, maintaining Earth's resources with our products. You know, we're looking to maintain talent in our city, you know, kind of create ecosystems where people feel like they have an opportunity to build. Because I feel like growing up in Denver, a lot of people, including myself, didn't feel like they had the access to, you know, places they can build. You know, I think everybody wanted to be from somewhere else besides Denver. And now me being back here, I want to, you know, create, because I think people go to these bigger markets, they feel like they have to go to Chicago, LA, New York to fulfill their dreams. And the reason they go to those places is because there's a lot of resources, there's a lot of networking, there's a lot of, you know, people out there building. And I want to create that same culture here in Denver because it's a perfect place for it. You know, you have access to outdoors, you have access to amazing architecture, amazing creatives, but I feel like a lot of people get swept under the rug due to like the just culture here in Colorado. So we're doing a little bit of changing, but I think it's beautiful soil to grow and plant seeds in. And I feel like a lot of people are coming from other states to build. So I think that a culture is rising as we speak. So I'm excited to be a part of the Renaissance phase of Denver.
Nice. I have a similar sensation about my hometown, Monroe, Louisiana.
Okay. I was going to ask where the accent's from.
Oh, yeah. It's from Louisiana for sure. Northeast part of Louisiana. And yeah, there's definitely a lot of drain there. There's a lot. I feel, my grandma told me one day, she's like, well, people don't want to live any differently in Monroe than they do. Like, they like it how it is. And so, you know, whether that's true or not is, that's just her opinion, I think. But it's also a little bit, I kind of get that sensation. But there has been pop-ups of people, especially lately, who are like trying to redo the downtown area, trying to bring more creative energy into that space. And so I definitely can empathize with that feeling. And so you said you left and then came back. Where did you go?
Yes, I went to school at Emporia State University. It's in right outside Kansas City. I was playing basketball out there. And yeah, Kansas City was a cool place. And I think anywhere Midwest, you'll find your cool pockets of, you know, places. But I think it's also breeds a culture of not really being progressive. You know, you'll find a lot of, if you're not in like the main city, like Kansas City or Chicago or wherever, you know, other state, if you're not in the main city, you're probably from like a small town. And yeah, you'll find a bunch of these different places having a bunch of like old money, you know, old thinking.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I just it was time for me to go. I think I enjoyed the food, enjoyed my college experience, enjoyed playing sports out there, met a lot of great people. But like I said, it wasn't really my speed as far as like progressive and how I wanted. I think Colorado is like my perfect speed. It's as of right now, at least, definitely looking to travel other places. But yeah, Colorado is just like I said, a great place to build. So I'm excited to be back.
Nice. And I also resonate with that feeling of like, yeah, okay, let's go, people, let's get it. But so it sounds like, and I'm just gathering this from what you've talked about and what you've said, like, you created false ego more so from the communal part of things, and then it just kind of blossomed into also having a storefront. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it also seems like, did you have a lot of this knowledge and then you just sort of put it all together?
Yeah, for sure. I'll go into sort of the backstory. So like I said, I went to Emporia State, was playing basketball for 4 years. And when you're playing sports, you know, it takes up a lot of your life. I mean, that's how you're paying for your college, so you're paying for your food. So it's really like a job. So you spend 40 plus hours a week, you know, doing this sport, and you don't really have much time to do much else. So after I got done playing basketball, I had to do extra semester of school to finish out my degree. I was a health administration major. And so I ended up doing my internship at this aviation aerospace company. I was a wellness coordinator for them. And, you know, great experience. I really enjoyed the time spent out there. It was my first like professional experience outside of, you know, different like things I've done in between. But also during that time, I was like kind of like trying to find myself outside of sports. You know, I was like, I didn't know what I wanted to do, what I was interested in. And I kind of did a bunch of like deep dive soul searching and kind of got really involved. I think as you know, become more in tune with yourself, you become more in tune with everything around you. And I started seeing, you know, being in the Midwest, they don't really care about recycling. You don't see a bunch of green acts out there. You don't see a lot of environmentally conscious people. And it was really getting to me after a while. I'm like, wow, why does nobody care about what's going on? There's like all these things going on in the world and like seems like nobody cares. And so I started a bunch of research on different companies that were doing a bunch of different initiatives, whether it be community initiative, recycling, et cetera. And through that, I kind of found a passion through graphic designing. I was like, all right, I see the problem, and I also see where there's a barrier of younger generations hopping on this train. And I know that barrier was through creativity. Like, I feel like there was a communication barrier. And I was like, all right, I can kind of create these designs or create this like art that could, you know, bridge that gap. And so I started graphic designing, and through that, I created the name False Ego and decided I wanted to make a brand. I didn't know what that brand was going to be yet. I didn't know if it was going to be a recycling company, if it was going to be a clothing brand or festival, whatever. But I was doing a bunch of research and I found there was a couple companies that really inspired me as far as like G-Star jeans that were taking, you know, recycle or plastic from the oceans and making it into jeans. Or there was another company called Broccoli City Festival, where they had a festival where they would have, they're based out of DC, and they would have a festival where they would have like upcoming artists and do performances. They would have a bunch of local vendors from DC, whether it be artists, vegan food trucks, clothing, et cetera. And they were really pushing the DC community. And then outside of the festival, they'd have a conference where they would have a bunch of leaders from around the world come in and talk about how to make impact in your community. Then outside of that, they were teaching students how to grow their own vegetables in their elementary schools. And then they also had a broccoli bar, which was like a small grocery store in inner city DC. And they had all these different facets of what they were doing. And I was like, that's what I want to do. Like, how do I, you know, create a core, but also like create different branches of how do I make impact, kind of like allowing yourself to be more accessible than just making one thing or just having a festival or just one, you know, whatever. So yeah, that was like the whole goal. And it was more of just like a learning process on how to make that happen that got me here. And I feel like a lot of people, when they first start out the entrepreneurial journey, they think like, oh, it's just one idea and then that was it. It's like, no, it's thousands and thousands of ideas, you know, as you learn more about business, as you learn more about how all these things work, gain more connections and resources, like the ideas get iterated on a daily basis. And I think me embracing that process and being patient along there got us here. But more of the story. So after I created the idea, I launched it probably like a year later after I moved back from Kansas City, after I finished my degree, moved back to Colorado and decided to go all in with False Ego.
And you launched only a year after you decided you were going to do this?
Yeah. So I did it like a year of planning. And yeah, just kind of was like, all right, it's time to go. Started when I got back to Colorado, I didn't really have much of a network out here. So I just started finding out low hanging fruit resources. So there's a small business development center where I got this business model canvas from and ended up presenting in front of a few people after that and ended up getting my first angel investor. It was this older lady, and I still am not sure who exactly it was, but I think I have an idea of the people I presented to. She wanted to say anonymous, so I was like, cool. But she ended up giving me $10,000 to start out with and left me a note and said, I hope it helps. And I was like, wow. And that's when I knew I was like on the right path, because like I think the universe kind of gives you these breadcrumbs that let you know, like, keep going. So got my first angel investor and really started just like, kind of, it gave me a lot of breathing room to make mistakes. I think I didn't know, like, as far as like profit margins, what I was supposed to be making, how much I was supposed to pay for a t-shirt. When you get into clothing, it's hard to find manufacturers that don't require you to make 10,000 garments per color, or like these have these minimums. And there's like a whole thing with that. But outside of that, kind of just started doing pop-up events and started really diving into community. I really started also doing a bunch of urban farming. So that was something I did from like the end of 2018 till about the August of 2020.
Who'd you do that with?
I did it with a couple of nonprofits. So there's a company called Frontline Farming that I started out with. I was honestly how that happened. I end up meeting this guy at a temple, and he was one of the cooks, and the temple owned a bunch of like real estate, like two blocks of houses, and they were doing a bunch of gardening that would also, whatever they gardened would go into their restaurant that was linked up to the temple. And I got linked up with one of the chefs, and he was helping with the garden. So I was volunteering, helping him out. Then he started volunteering for this other big nonprofit called Frontline Farming. And I was volunteering for Frontline Farming so much, they're like, hey, like, do you want a job? And I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll take a job.
That was in Denver?
That was in Denver, yep. So
a temple, not the temple, right?
Yeah, a Buddhist temple I was going to. But yeah, so that's kind of how that was random. I was just meeting a friend there and ended up meeting some cool people. And it was a great experience. So then from there, got involved with Frontline Farming. Like I said, they offered me a job. So started getting like stipend checks from them. And from there, I kind of just fell in love with like, wow, I can really grow my own food. And they had like six different sites. A couple of them were a few acres, but they were all in food deserts. So for the listeners who don't know what a food desert is, it's an area that you don't have immediate access to, fresh produce or a grocery store. You'll probably find these areas mostly minority neighborhoods, and you'll find a bunch of fast food restaurants, anything but a grocery store. And a lot of people are having to commute, 2 or 3 miles plus to actually, get to a grocery store. So we would create gardens in these communities that gave the local residents, fresh produce. And from there, that was my first experience. And then the next summer, I was working with Frontline Farming again, as well as MHCD, who's a mental health center in Denver. And they had a greenhouse, and they had also an acre of land, and I was doing an apprenticeship with them. So I was learning how to do hydroponics and aquaponics, as well as do more farming on the actual acre they owned. And that with the apprenticeship was, amazing, because it really forced me to learn, because part of the apprenticeship to complete it, they gave you like reading materials and like courses to take. And like, I really learned what it takes to like run a farm and how to grow your own food, et cetera. So that was part of the community. And then during that time in August, Edens, who owns all the property we're in right now, called me and they're like, hey, we love what you're doing with False Ego. We have some vacant units we'd love for you to fill. And if you're interested, if you're taking a tour, you should come down. And I didn't think it was real at first. I was like, there's no way this is like real right now. But yeah, so we started off with a 6-month like pop-up, contract. And then we ended up signing our extension for a couple years in February of this year. So I think we ended up bringing a lot more value than they initially expected. And then we ended up, like I said, just signing our extension. So we're going to be here for a little while longer. So excited about that.
Wow, that's really cool.
For sure.
I'm so glad. Thank you for sharing that. I'm really in awe of how much you've gardened and like gotten to know the food and worked with the community. And hopefully you and I can stay in touch. I would love to get to know you more. You sound like a very, very deep person. So this is just the surface. And I know we kind of got a little deep, but I still feel like it's just the surface. And
for sure.
You have such a rich experience in life, and you really live things very deeply and fully.
Appreciate that. Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, there's this quote that I really like stuck with during that time. It was like, any great leader was once a servant. And I took that as, you know, a chance for me to, you know, embrace that in my own life of being a servant to my community, whether it be through farming. And I feel like a lot of people, when you're around these farmers, they're so grounded. They're so, like, they don't care about this hustle culture that we all live in of, like, making $1 million or, you know, owning 12 businesses or whatever. All they care about is, like, being a steward of their community and a steward of the land that they live on. And I think that alone is just amazing. And when we first opened our store, one of the first designs we came out with was culture is currency. And I think that kind of translates to the message of, you know, the initial community that we have. Like, we don't have, you know, 100,000 people following us on Instagram or, you know, any of these like metrics that people like go off of right now. But we have a super, super strong community that supports us through winds and high water. And I think that is what allows us to have the impact that we're able to have and kind of create these different connections because we have such a strong foundation within our community.
Well, Javon, I don't want to keep you too far past your time. We're at the 36 mark, so.
We can keep going, honestly, if you want to.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I know we were only booked for 30 minutes, but I think that's just what I had the default as.
Oh, good.
Yeah, well, what about the artwork behind you? Who did that? For people who are listening, unfortunately, you won't be able to see this unless you visit my Instagram. I'll share a picture of this on there, or you can watch the YouTube video, but it's really cool. It's a beautiful mural.
Yeah, so this is an artist called, her name is Kaylee. I think her Instagram is at no Kaylee, K-A-Y-L-E-E. She's a local artist. She is actually her first mural she ever did, so I was happy. We gave her the opportunity to do that. I didn't find out it was her first one until she was doing it. She's like, yeah, it's my first one I've ever done. I was like, wow. But yeah, so I met her at this gallery down the street. My guy Rob runs that, and it's called the IRL Gallery or IRL Art Gallery. And met her there and was like, yo, I love your art. And we kind of just chopped it up. And I was like, yo, we're trying to fill some wall space in our store. Would you be willing to do a mural? And yeah, worked out a deal, and here we are. But yeah, I think that's like the whole mission is like we want to, you know, find these hidden gems and give them a platform to display their work. So she's one of those hidden gems we found.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's something very special, her first mural. So what else do you want to talk about to showcase whatever it is that y'all do? I like to give my guests an opportunity to steer since I feel like I've been steering.
For sure. Yeah, all good. I think right now, I mean, I think we covered most of the things I really wanted to talk about. But I mean, if any of the listeners want to follow us on any social media or go onto our website or to kind of just, you know, stay in tune with our journey, our Instagram is at falseego. So false_EG0. That's the name. You find us on Facebook, find us on LinkedIn, Twitter. I think that's all the social medias that we're on. You go to our website. Our website is falseego.eco, like E-C-O. It's our website. And
oh, is it really? I only pulled it up on the phone. I didn't realize.
Got the eco domain, which is really dope when we first. I think that was another thing. I was like, this will differentiate us and put us a part of a community full of other eco domains. And we also are on the way to become a B Corp. So we're getting a lot of mentorship from a couple of different partners, but Patagonia is one of them. We've been able to link up with them pretty recently. I think that's one of the benefits of just being in this location. Oh, also, you can find us at a location at 2650 Walnut Street, the Five Points Rhino area. And but yeah, I think, you know, being in this location has just been amazing. We've been able to, you know, connect with amazing organizations, amazing people. And, you know, you never know who's going to walk in the door. Like, we have people from, you know, a Vanity Fair come in, or people who are like design agents for North Face or whatever. You know, you'll find people from all walks of life and that are doing amazing things, walking your door, and you never know who you'll connect with. So maybe hopefully we'll see one of these listeners come in and, you know, come show love. So yeah, I think right now we're just kind of in expansion phase and looking to, you know, expand our impact and kind of, like I said, be accessible in all ways. So we have a podcast called A Part of Everything Podcast as well.
Oh, do you really? I didn't realize that.
For sure. Yes, on YouTube as well as Instagram. So you just look it up, A Part of Everything Podcast. And what else do we do? We're doing like tiny desk sessions called false ego sessions. So we're finding like hidden gem artists out here and giving them platforms to, you know, sing, rap, do spoken word, etc.
Oh, and one thing y'all do that we haven't mentioned is you plant a tree for every online order?
Yep, every online order plants a tree in Tanzania. So we're working right now to work with the National Wildlife Federation to make some of the impact initiatives we help fund through our online orders more tangible. Because right now, it's like, yes, it's cool you get to plant a tree. It's really dope. You're helping an amazing community in Africa. But a lot of people don't have connections to Tanzania. So how do we make the impact more tangible? So how can we, you know, plant a tree in Denver, Colorado? Or how can we create more national park space for wolves here in Colorado? Or how do we save owls here in some of the national parks or in this region? How do we, you know, create more space for buffaloes, et cetera? But, or even like native, create more residential space for native or indigenous tribes here in Colorado. And I think that kind of work is super important. And we're trying to make that an actual thing that you can, you know, support with your dollars through your purchase with False Ego products.
Nice. So how do you go about sort of making that shift? You're just finding companies who are local, or not companies, but organizations who are local and talking to them and deciding, like, this is a good path for us to go, maybe not this one.
Yeah, it's kind of just finding initiatives that, one, matter, and two, like, Denver communities need, or just, like I said, just kind of making it more tangible. Like, because if I think a lot of companies, not only do they say, like, so for example, H&M, I don't want to like bash any company or anything like that. But like, you know, you find these bigger companies that have like, oh, like, we'll, you know, become more sustainable. We'll do this initiative in 2030.
Mm-hmm.
How do you hold a company accountable for, you know, 9-10 years? It's hard to do that. So it's like, we want to like work where we're at, you know, how can we help the Denver community, which then will expand to like this region, Midwest region. And then we'll go to, you know, maybe beyond our country, who knows? But so you got to start where you're at, and we want to allow people to, you know, help do that themselves as well.
And that's what I say in my intro for the podcast, is I help people with get tangible steps to create a more eco-friendly home. Because yeah, like, if you're like, oh yeah, and imagine in 10 years you're like, I'm gonna buy a passive house, a net zero home in 10 years. Okay, well then what are you doing for those 10 years? And I'm glad that you said that. I really don't like the way that our society is so like, I'll do it in 10, sometimes 30 years. They just keep going back. I keep getting these emails from United Airlines, or I think I was for a little bit. I unsubscribed, obviously. Don't want to receive those, but it was like, we're going to be carbon neutral by 2050. And I was just like pulling my hair out. Like, what are you doing? This is such BS. But yeah, the tangible steps, the actionable steps now are really important. And so I try and provide listeners with things that they can do now, such as, you know, switch their closet over to more sustainable clothing, whether that be purchasing from a thrift store, which you're attuned to as well, since you said you can send us your False Ego clothing back in the same package that we sent it to you in, and we will turn that into something else or resell it if it's still a wearable item.
Exactly.
Or purchasing clothing from stores like you that are very mindful about, you know, where the material comes from, who you do your manufacturing with, and which we haven't gotten into in depth, but it's all over your website. So listeners, definitely go check out falseego.eco. And yeah, I think there's things.
For sure. Yeah, to drop a couple facts about just sustainable fashion in general. One, fashion itself is the number two polluter in the world behind gas and oil. And a big reason why that is because of the water usage, as well as the waste portion of it. So we'll start with the water usage. Like a regular cotton t-shirt, you know, your regular Hanes, you can get at Walmart. That alone takes 2,700 liters of water to make. And there are 2 billion t-shirts sold each year. Not made, but sold. So who knows how many are made. So, I mean, that is 54 billion gallons of water or something like that.
And we can't even like conceptualize what that means, but like an average person's, you need like 1.5 gallons a day of drinking water. Like you're supposed to.
2,700 liters is 90 days of how we can survive on water. 90 days worth of water.
For a t-shirt. For one t-shirt.
T-shirt. Yeah. And then on top of that, you know, you find these fast fashion brands, which a lot of people support, unfortunately. And like the biggest portion of the is a waste portion of it. It's like, I think the average American throws away 81 pounds of textiles a year. And, you know, when you're, which is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. But outside of that, you know, these things are thrown away or, you know, given to Goodwill, and Goodwill can only, you know, I think they only keep, I think like 27 or 30% of what they get, and the other 70% ends up in landfill.
Or a lot of it also gets shipped off into like giant bags of clothing sent to different countries in Africa. And then people end up purchasing those large, like trash bag, full sized, like barrel of clothing, and then selling that off to different people as a means for their income to other people in their. That's definitely part of what happens to the clothes that can't get sold.
Yeah, sometimes. And then even then, like what they can't use is in a landfill. So regardless, it's going to end up in this landfill. And it's crazy because, I mean, when you think of, say, like your regular T-shirt, a Nike T-shirt, probably not 100% organic material, probably has polyester in it. Polyester is made from crude oil, and crude oil takes, or like crude oil garments take, I think, 170 years to decompose in a landfill. And your regular cotton T-shirt takes, I think, 70 years to decompose in a landfill. And it's ridiculous. Like, it's really mind-blowing. I mean, and it's not even just clothing. It's, you know, it's trash. It's food. It's plastic. It's all these different things. And I think the core of the problem is just our consumer decisions. You know, and also us consumers holding these companies accountable. I think a lot of people don't understand the power they have as an individual consumer, because, I mean, we as consumers control the market. If we're no longer buying these products, these companies will no longer sell them because they're not making money. You know, it's like simple when you think about the transition between like 20 years ago or even like 10 years ago. And now, you know, there's a way higher demand, you know, cage-free eggs or almond milk. Or whatever, you know, these different eco or just more healthier options of food. The reason why that's demanded is because we as consumers are like, we don't want these processed foods anymore. How can we get healthier options? And that's why there's more options for you in the grocery store, because we as consumers demanded that. I think we need to do the same thing with fashion. We need to do the same thing with everything else. But it's like, people, we understand we vote with our dollars. So let's really start supporting these, you know, good companies and actually care about the values these companies hold and know where your stuff comes from.
So. I'm glad that you brought the consumer demand into the conversation, because there's definitely people who say in there's documentaries that say, no, it's the big companies. Like, the big companies have to change the stuff, which comes from policy, which comes from lobbyists. So like, regardless of if you're coming from that angle or if you're coming from the consumer demand angle, they both take time and consistency. So like, why not hit it from both angles and do both? And also, today is Earth Day. So happy Earth. I am not doing anything very specific for Earth Day today, which as a regenerative real estate agent, I feel like I ought to be, but I did just sign up for the Living Future accreditation yesterday. And so I will start taking those courses today. And every day I'm like trying to push things to change. Like, I'm not currently composting, which I ought to be. So I've been looking into composting for my new apartment. I just moved. And so, well, not just, it's been a couple months. So, but when you move, things change, you know, you lose the systems that you had in place before. And also I realized that my apartment complex doesn't recycle right now. And so I was like, I have to figure out what to do about that.
That was that was my first business plan I ever wrote. Was a recycling program for an apartment complex. Yeah.
When I was in Monroe, I lived back home for a summer in 2018. I moved here from Florida, moved back home for 6 months, and I was really pushing people to recycle in Monroe. That was also where I sort of started with that too. It was like, okay, let's just start here.
Absolutely.
But I might have to get some of that information from you for the apartment complex recycling, because I need to contact them and say, hey, I don't know why you guys aren't recycling. Like, can we at least just get another dump? I'm sure people wouldn't mind paying an extra $5 a month for that, because $5 a month would cover however many people are there.
Sure.
And still some.
You should look up this company called Scraps. They're locally based in Denver, and they do like composting. And you've heard of them?
That's the one I recently found because my boyfriend just moved out to Wheat Ridge and he does have recycling pickup. But for the composting, I was like, okay, what are we going to do? And yeah, Scraps is a new one that I found.
For sure. Absolutely. Great company. The owner is really, really cool too. She's one of the CEOs I was like contacting when I first started to kind of like pick her brain. Like, you know, how do I go about, you know, starting this business? And like, yeah, but great company for sure.
Nice. I'll definitely reach out to them. I'll let them know we spoke.
Absolutely.
Well, are y'all doing anything special for Earth Day or?
Yeah, so we're going to be doing like a little cleanup around the community. We're doing with the Patagonia employees as well as this co-working space down the street called Green Spaces, doing something with them. And then we're doing another river cleanup this weekend for the South Platte River over there by REI. I'm going to be cleaning up that river this weekend on Saturday.
That's the one that I saw on y'all's calendar, and I went ahead and added that to my calendar, so I'll be there.
For sure.
And I did see that I was looking at joining a co-working space, and I saw you on Green Spaces' website. I was like, oh, that's...
Yeah, no, Green Spaces is amazing. Shout out to them. Austin, who owns it, and Allie, who's like the manager there, two amazing people, and glad to be a part of that community for sure.
Cool. Well, thank you, Javon, for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate you being here.
Absolutely. Appreciate you, Madison. Thanks for having me. And I'll definitely be following for future episodes as well.
Cool. Yeah. And I'll let you know when yours is going to come out.
Perfect. Sounds good.
Podcast listeners, as always, thanks for being a guest in my eco-friendly home today. I really hope you learned something new, and I hope you find a way to implement this into your life so you too can create your eco-friendly home. As always, I'm available to direct message on Instagram at Moving with Madison. And besides my podcast, I provide services as a real estate change agent in the Denver metro area, specializing in helping you buy, sell, or create your eco-friendly home. Something that this podcast is helping me get better at each and every day. When you come back over, please bring those cookies again. They were really good, and I'll see y'all next time.